This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio. And joining me here in studio is my good friend Michael Golden, author of Unlock Congress, a recent birthday boy. Thanks for being able to show up here this morning. Appreciate it very much. Michael, you heard Congressman Roskam in the previous segment. We were talking, you know, probably one of the foremost concerns is the issue of where goest the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare. And, you know, with all of the Republican efforts to repeal as a minority or even in a majority, but with a Democratic president, and now, you know, now it's repeal it, but what comes next? And I think that's really driving some of the consternation along with, besides the concerns over the president. But where do you see this debate going on what the future of the Affordable Care Act is?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. There's nowhere I'd rather be hungover than in the Allstate WGN Showcase Studio.
I think you were the first guest I've ever had to admit that.
Yeah, well, you know, truth, no fake news, truth. So actually, this is a really interesting question to me beyond the parameters you just laid out, because it does tie in to what you know I wrote about in Unlock Congress, and healthcare was one of the examples I used. We've known for decades and decades and decades that this is a system that needed to be fixed. I call it a non-system because the parts weren't working together. It cost a fortune. There wasn't enough access. And what President Obama tried to do, you know, if he had his choice, he probably would have single payer or public option. But you can't, you know, you certainly can't do that in Washington right now because of that logjam. So what did they do? They compromised. A lot of people on the right would think that's not compromise, but it is. It's based on conservative plans going back, 10 years. And the thing is that even with all the good it did, 20 million new insured, and the cost curves looks to be bending down at least a little long term. And that's a lot of what this is about, our long term unfunded liabilities where the country's going bankrupt. You have to change that. You have to have preventative care, so on and so forth, pre-existing conditions. Everybody knows the good stuff. And what the Republicans, I remember when I first heard those words, repeal and replace, you know, I thought, that's just a great marketing term. It's alliterative, R-E-L-P, you know, it just sounds, they'll be riding that thing for years. And they did. The problem is, that's a locked-in position. They probably knew this, but they wanted to win elections. And that's, you know, part of what I have problems with is that these guys, Congress doesn't work together to fix problems the way they used to, especially for big pieces of legislation that need it. Social Security was fixed. Medicare has been fixed time and time again. But nowadays, look, the last time we had an comprehensive immigration bill fixed, or even tried to be fixed, was Simpson-Mazzoli 30 years ago. So these things sit out there. And where is this going? It's going to be difficult to tell, because what would be great is if the parties came together and said, okay, we know we have these problems with the hours worked and some of the cost problems and that, you know, the insurance, some of the companies have dropped out and there's not as much choice. We agree it's not perfect. As Democrats, we agree it's not perfect. But don't let the bottom drop out of this whole thing and rattle markets and risk doing things that I don't even think the Republicans want to do. And you can hear them now talking about, well, it's going to take longer, and that's fine. But it would be great to see the parties actually work together. As you know, the problem is, especially in the House, they're already looking down the barrel of elections. In 3 weeks into a new administration, they're looking at 2018, which is why I'm for four-year terms, by the way.
Well, and you do hear things like the things that everybody can agree on from the Affordable Care Act. As you said, the coverage for pre-existing conditions. I think everybody agrees about having your child on your parents' coverage till they're 26. That's almost become like a universal acceptance of that. But then you start dealing into issues of private market and all of those things. And plus the true effect in the economy of what healthcare spending is as a part of the U.S. economic product.
Yeah, and not to get too super nerdy, but there is an interesting philosophical derivative of why there are these problems in the healthcare non-system. And that is that, unlike a lot of other countries, the word regulation in America has become a dirty word. And really, though, that goes back to our founding, you know, that original idea of free market, no monarchy, we just want a war, we want to be able to do this in the States, so on and so forth. And that's why more so progressives want the power of the central government to make things fair for most people, and a lot of conservatives would rather have the states handle it. And you can have an argument as to which is better. But when it comes to health care, right, look, there's an inherent conflict in our government trying to provide health care within an industry that's a for-profit industry, that it's always going to be difficult unless you provide health care for all your people, which is what single payer is. If you're going to have these markets and have insurance, you know, people call it the health care reform. It was health insurance reform. We didn't reform that much of how all the health care is delivered, but at least more people were covered and they tried to change the costs a bit. So this is tricky stuff. I don't pretend to have all the answers, and that's why I go back to the point. A problem that's this complicated, you got to get people in a room that can listen to each other and agree on a set of facts. And you hear that same stale argument going back and forth. You know, you had even Congressman Roskam was talking about if you like your doctor, you can keep it. Yes, that was wrong. That's not the same as the lies we're hearing now. That was incorrect. You know, you can make an argument even that the administration may have believed that and made a miscalculation. So it would be great if the parties could actually sit down and talk about this stuff, even have public hearings to the point where it could educate Americans. And I think President Obama was going to try to do that, and then they kind of scrapped that. Remember, right. They were going to have full transparency. And like we're seeing play out with the court stuff, it would have been a good civics lesson for the few people like us who would have watched it.
Well, you also touched on immigration, for example. And, of course, you know, here we are with we have the Ninth Circuit's ruling. Yeah. We had last night's SNL with the People's Court ruling.
I did see that before I nodded off, yeah.
The congressman... Congressman Roskam says he thinks there's a laudable goal here in this travel ban. I'd like your thoughts on this.
You know, I have a different take on this. You know, it's so much controversy over it being called a Muslim ban, and I think Congressman Roskam just said that it's not a Muslim ban, or it's based right. on these other seven countries, and just because it's their majority Muslim countries doesn't mean it's a Muslim ban. You know, I'm not even going to get into that because I think there's and this is really an opinion. I'm basing it on things I've heard and read, especially read about Steve Bannon. And I think that where these guys really bonded, Trump and Bannon, is that Trump was screaming these populist screeds during the primaries and the general election about illegal immigration, about the forgotten man, about, you know, unemployment and ripping and not giving any credit for the economic recovery that we have seen even in measured fashion over the last years. And if you read about Steve Bannon and in his own quotes, and you don't know this is true or not, but when, you know, he describes himself not as a white nationalist, not as a national, but as an economic nationalist. And he describes what that means. And I think that this was them dipping their toe in the water to just stop immigration, legal immigration. I think that those swing states that Donald Trump won and brought people into Congress, believe shockingly, on his own coattails when everyone thought the reverse was going to be true, I think that with the problems we have in this country and the Rust Belt and factories gone and a changing economy, I think that what they want to do is tighten the borders, period. I think that, you know, Steve Bannon said something along the lines of, I'm paraphrasing, but let us do this our way, and we'll have control for 50 years. And he said we'll get X percent of the black vote, X percent of the Latino vote, like he had sort of mapped this out, not in a way that we don't need the minority vote, just that we're going to take care of the people here. And so I think that this was a way of doing that was aligned with Trump's anti, you know, well, anti-everything, right? and it hasn't gone that well. If you're trying to tip your toe in the water and take that first step towards really cutting off more immigration, you do it so sloppily like this. I'm not sure how well it bodes for just try. You know, I think it's a numbers game. They want to keep the population where it is and try to increase job growth through whatever plans they come out with. But I think that that's hidden in this whole big controversy about it being a Muslim land. Now, I'm against it anyway, but that's what I think might be the deeper meaning.
Look over here instead of looking over there.
Exactly.
We're speaking with Michael Golden. He's the author of Unlock Congress, and he's a senior fellow at the Edley Stevenson Center on Democracy. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin on this beautiful Sunday morning in downtown Chicago. The sun is starting to make its way through the clouds, and we're supposed to have a sunny afternoon, but windy today. We're speaking here in the Allstate Showcase studio with my good friend Michael Golden. He's the author of Unlock Congress and was recently named a senior fellow at the Edley Stevenson Center on Democracy. And I know that they are putting together this democracy reform agenda. Why don't you tell us what that's all about?
Well, this has been a real honor, you know, being a native Illinoisan and this legendary political family, former Senator Stephen Stevenson III. He's a fascinating...
Add three,
exactly. And his father was the Gov, affectionately known as the Gov, who ran for president twice in the 50s. And the former senator... who came to my 50th last night. We've become fast friends. And, you know, he's 86 years old, nearly, and he's got this idea that's aligned with a lot of the things that I wrote about in Unlock Congress. And we met last year, and then he read my book and reached out to me and asked for, I was shocked and honored, you know, help on the congressional forums. And it's this agenda for political reform that the center, a nonpartisan Stevenson Center, is promoting. And we're still putting it together and bringing in stakeholders so we get a lot of opinions outside of what we think. And it's pretty broad. It's not just about Congress. Although it's about campaign finance reform, it is about unrigging districts. It's about the Electoral College is a piece of this. There might even be a piece on civic education because you know that's where it starts, is informing folks about this stuff. And we're going to bring in stakeholders like Common Cause, like Mayday.us, you know, a number of reformers that are working on some of these issues. And the point is, and you know this is a passion of mine, that no matter what side of the aisle you're on, we need to change some rules here in order to get this system functioning again. And boy, do we need that in Illinois. This is not just an agenda for reform for federal offices. Some of the questions were asked, can we streamline some of the offices here? Voting rights, that's no matter where you are and what reforms you're choosing, we got midterms coming up in 2018, and voting rights and voting abuses and voting suppression is a huge issue. I don't mean the ridiculous claims of this president about 3 million votes. I mean efforts using that cynical accusation to try to suppress the vote in places where it could be advantageous to one side of the aisle. So it's a real honor working on this with Senator Stevenson. He's the former Illinois treasurer, former U.S. senator. He was a U.S. Marine. He served in Korea. A fascinating life. And a little quick footnote that I didn't know till this past year. His great-great-grandfather is the one who convinced Abraham Lincoln to run for president.
I thought that was the Chicago Tribune.
Well, it was Mr. Fell. I'm forgetting his first name. But, he came on my podcast program a week ago, Adelaide III, and just listening to his stories and this fountain of wisdom and experience on these issues, because he's seen it all. And he was, when he was in the U.S. Senate for 12 years, I believe 70 to 82, he was a big reformer. And that's when you remember that Jake Javits, that's when there were more representatives and senators who talked to each other. And you had liberal Republicans and you had, you know, Reagan Democrats, and you had more of a mix until this regional realignment we've seen over the last couple decades that's kind of split our country into the red and blue more so.
Well, and more division, more winner take all, more nonstop campaign. And I used to, as I've said many times, I used to joke that I never really wanted to cover D.C. because I could go back to Springfield because Springfield in its day actually functioned.
It did. And we in Adelaide, we talk about that, especially when they had cumulative voting and proportional representation before they changed the number in the assembly.
The Pat Quinn cutback amendment.
Right, that's right.
That invested more power into the leadership. And now at a time with where money is the king, it's the people with the money that control the votes.
That's right. And that's number one. I mean, like I said, it's a work in progress, but number one on that list is campaign finance reform. It's and the best, look, we've known for decades that something smelled wrong with the system, but now there's empirical data. And one of the most impactful statistics in the presentation I do about Unlock Congress is the study by Martin Gillens and Ben Page of Princeton Northwestern. They took 1,779, so nearly 2,000 policy questions, and statistically ran how they were decided in Congress over many years. And what they found was the top 10% wealthiest in this country, their preferences have 15 times the influence on government decisions as the rest of us, 90%. So, and basically, I'm quoting them, they said the majority does not rule in this country.
The numbers game.
Yeah.
That's Michael Golden. He's the author of Unlock Congress and a senior fellow, the new senior fellow, at the Edley Stevenson Center on Democracy. Michael, happy birthday and thanks for joining me.
It's great to be 30 years old, Rick. Thanks for having me, guys.
We'll be back with more right after this.